Chapter 13, The Only One Hurt. The next chapter needs to be clear about one thing above all others, so I will say it plainly and keep saying it until it cannot be misunderstood. No one else was hurt. I was the only person injured. There were no other victims, no other vehicles, no damaged homes, no shattered lives beyond my own. Thank God for that. Because anything else is manageable, and life, by comparison, is still good. Or so I thought. If I did not convey that early enough in the last chapter, let me remove all doubt now. I was the only one involved. The only physical reminder outside of me is a scar visible on my neighbor's tree. Even the lawn was untouched. No property damage beyond that. No collateral harm. From the moment I was under the care of a physician, I knew I was in good hands, and everything else felt like gravy. I had put the truck on the road barely a month earlier. Fortunately, it was a safe vehicle, something that mattered far more than I understood at the time. What I didn't yet know was how serious my injuries actually were, or what the financial consequences would eventually look like. That thought crossed my mind briefly, and it was immediately dismissed. Compared to what could have happened, it felt insignificant. I was transported to the emergency room as a level 2 trauma. That designation alone meant they were concerned. It also meant I spent 6 or 7 quiet hours in a private room before being admitted. I remained hospitalized for 2 days, fully aware then and now of how fortunate I was. The investigation that wasn't. My interaction with the investigating officer was minimal. He asked how I believed the accident occurred. That was essentially it. At the time, I was still trying to understand what happened myself. I knew I had fallen asleep, but also wondered whether I had blacked out due to unknown medical issues. I was cautious with my words, not out of deception, but because language matters, especially when insurance companies are involved. I was honest about my speed. He asked no further questions about my actions prior to the accident. This matters because the officer was not just any patrolman. He was a trained and active as a drug recognition expert, or DRE. A level of training that goes well beyond the standard of driving while intoxicated enforcement. It is a detailed, methodical, and designed to identify impairment. Nothing about me raised concern for him. He later testified to that under oath in Supreme Court. Body camera footage from his arrival confirmed something important. Nobody knew where I was. My neighbor, whose tree I struck, had only just returned home and called 911. Emergency personnel were there, gathered, when another neighbor, Billy Heath, arrived with the information that I was on my porch being attended to. At some point, the officer returned to his vehicle and drove to my location. He had already indicated that my truck would be left where it was, pending my wishes. There is no second segment of the body camera footage from that day. To my knowledge, no other officers arrived and no additional footage exists. I don't know whether it was never recorded or later erased. But that absence matters. It was during this gap where corroboration should have existed that later accusations were allowed to grow. Had I known at the time that no one knew where I was, I would have made a greater deal about it. Made more noise about it. I followed procedure. I sought help. I removed myself from danger and got medical care. The suggestion later made in a judicial ruling that I should have sat on the ground and waited is detached from reality. I was injured. I acted to get medical care as quickly as possible, and I did. That's not misconduct. That's survival. While I was recovering, I heard nothing from anyone. Nearly 2 weeks after the accident, my insurance company settled the property loss without issue. They'd been provided evidence explaining why I might have fallen asleep, and they were satisfied. The police department still had my handgun, badge, and my identification card. I wasn't concerned. I had asked for those items to be secured for safekeeping. I was legally permitted to carry the firearm under my concealed carry permit. And at the time, I was also certified under H.R. 218, which allows qualified retired law enforcement officers to carry nationwide, subject to annual certification. Something she repeatedly refused to address when asked by First Sergeant Hughes. The chief's statements to New York State Police investigators on this was many of the direct lies meant to mislead them from the truth. I had no reason to believe anything severe was coming. At worst, I assumed they might improperly retain or destroy the firearm. Wrong, but survivable. I was focused on healing. Almost exactly 1 month later, everything changed. Thursday, September 12th, 2024, around 9 a.m., I was driving past the Ellesmere Elementary School as students were arriving. Several heavily armed officers were present, which did not surprise me. The department had been dealing with swatting incidences, false reports of active shooters targeting the schools. Those events stirred memories from my time as a school resource officer, particularly after Sandy Hook. I'd spent countless hours reassuring parents, answering questions no one should have to ask. Violence happens fast, too fast. Anyone who doesn't understand that hasn't lived it. That morning, I silently thanked the officers I saw. I was grateful to be retired, grateful not to be carrying the weight of unanswered questions and impossible expectations anymore. What I did not know, what I could not have known, was that during my recovery, something else had been forming, quietly, deliberately. Before going any further, I need to say this clearly. I accepted responsibility from the beginning. I was grateful no one else was harmed. And when I reflected honestly on the weeks leading up to the incident, I recognized areas where I'd grown careless and I had corrected them. I have always been my own harshest critic. I don't avoid accountability. I confront it. If anyone wishes to question my honesty about the day in question, I have nothing to hide. Friday, September 13th, 2024 began normally and ended in chaos. I had driven my girlfriend to Worcester, Mass. For her inner ear surgery. The procedure went well. We were relieved. On the drive home, exhausted and running on coffee, I received a call from my neighbor. Two uniformed officers had been looking for me. I assumed, wrongly, that they were returning my property from the accident. When I got home, I called them back. Looking back now, I understand that my physical exhaustion, emotional strain, and ongoing medical issues prevented me from recognizing what was coming. Had I paused, had I questioned it, this story might have read differently. Two uniformed officers were walking up my driveway. I knew they were coming. I was still completely blindsided.